BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Got Luke Combs and Green Day tickets to give away on the show a little bit later on. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. More preseason in the NFL this weekend. You got Eagles, Patriots on Thursday. Get to a handful of the other notable preseason games. Packers, Broncos, Stephen. What do you think of when you hear Packers, Broncos?
Super Bowl I.
Whoa. Super Bowl I was the Packers and the Chiefs.
What did you say?
Packers, Broncos.
Oh, I had Chiefs in my mind for something.
Yeah, well, you know, AFC West team.
Well, I was thinking same thing. That I would think of the Super Bowl.
In the 97 season.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I was trying to set you up for.
I was I was looking at news here on sports news, and I ran into the Chiefs.
Why do you need to worry about sports news? It's not like you work in the sports news industry.
I was just reading something about the Chiefs. That's why I had Chiefs in my mind. Sorry.
You know, you did tell me something in the break. The Mariners are in Detroit. And poor Mariners, by the way. Now that they catch fire, Houston can't lose. Houston's up on Mariners by a half game in the division. Even though the Mariners have won 4 in a row, Houston's won 6 in a row. Mariners are in Detroit, and you just told me something in the break. Julio Rodriguez got an extra base hit, which I shouldn't be surprised by. But
you should be, because he got a double, and it's only his 10th double on the season. I'm thinking that's just kind of low, isn't it?
Julio Rodriguez, 10 doubles all season, and we're midway through August.
I know he's been hurt on the IL. He just came off maybe a couple days ago. But
guys get that in April.
10?
That's bad, man. That's rough. It's been a rough season for Julio.
He has a good. Yeah. He has a 2 WAR though. It's like his other stats of and he walks and he steals bases. So I mean, he's
good defender.
Good defender. Still a good player. It's one of those guys you want more from.
I watched Bo Nix in his preseason game in Indianapolis this morning. So I got the highlights over the weekend. Then this morning I went back and watched of all of Bo's snaps in Indianapolis. Definitely had some bumps in the road. He fumbled a snap. You know, he missed a couple of guys when he was throwing on the move. So it wasn't all peaches and cream there for Bosef in his debut. But he also had pretty decent command of the offense. He handled some things. Late play calls coming in. Had to handle two-minute offense. Had to go quickly in two-minute offense. Did really well there. Obviously, he had a touchdown throw that was an RPO, everybody blocking for a run, and Bo just decided, hey, I'm going to throw this speed out, and he hit it right on the money. Steven, Bo Nix, underneath, simple, quick, he's going to be very, very good at that. And that's the definition of efficiency. Can you be quick? Can you be accurate? Can you make the right decision at the right time and deliver the football to your receivers? And then it's up to your receivers to maybe break a tackle and get a couple of extra yards. You saw examples of that a lot in the preseason debut he had in Indianapolis. And the question now is that going to be good enough to win the starting job in Denver?
Well, we've talked about just fit and how you fit with your team, and quarterbacks need a good fit. Bo Nix seems like the definition of a good fit with a Sean Payton offense. Like, Sean Payton wants to get the ball out quick and go underneath. And we saw Drew Brees make a Hall of Fame career out of that. And so Bo Nix has that ability to do that and do that successfully. So I think he will be the starter. And it is interesting because at some point, there'll be more tape on him and, teams will figure it out and they'll force him to have to throw the ball down the field. And can he make those throws? But for right now, I think, just throwing the ball, getting out quick, being, kicking those short throws, keeping the ball safe. Don't make mistakes. Don't throw picks. That's kind of all they want out of him right now.
A couple good scrambles in there, too.
I mean, he can make plays with his legs. We saw that when he was a junior. He made a lot of plays with his legs, not so much as a senior, but as a junior. I mean, he had, 15 rushing touchdowns, something like that? Like, he can move with the ball. And so I think he's going to be able to pull that out a little bit. He has the makings of a good quarterback. I don't know if he'll ever be great, but solid, he should be a solid quarterback. A
couple other takeaways from that Broncos team in general. It was cool to see Alex Forsythe at center. And he was the one delivering snaps to Bo Nix. So a little reunion, a little duck reunion there with Denver. Obviously, Alex is not going to be the starting center, but if he can make that team and be one of the rotational guys on the interior of that offensive line, it was just cool to see Alex Forsythe, snap into Bo Nix. And to the left of Alex was Calvin Throckmorton playing guard for the Broncos. And Calvin has been getting a lot of, he was with the Saints for a while, getting tackle reps. But now you see him at left guard next to Alex Forsythe and Bo Nix. So it was kind of like little ducks in Denver, to say nothing of even Troy Franklin, who has actually been, looks like, a little disappointing so far in training camp.
Yeah, Forsythe, not shocking, right? Like, that guy works so hard and he's so good.
Tough as nails.
Reminds me of a lot of Jaden Grant, where it's, a lot of things stacked against him, whether, athletically and things like that on that level, but he always made it work. And I think Jaden Grant was the same type of way. So it's not surprising that, Jaden Grant will stick with the team with the Raiders, or Alex Forsythe will stick with the Broncos, or wherever he sticks with. If the Broncos don't keep him, he'll find his way onto some other practice squad or some other regular 53-man squad and make a career out of the NFL, because he's just kind of that type of player. So, yeah, it's cool to look at that. And that was one of the reasons why the Broncos really liked him, Sean Payton. There was the story of Payton, went and he talked to Alex Forsythe about Bo Nix, and he just said, booming reviews about Bo and how good he is and how smart he is on and off the field. And it was one of the reasons why Sean Payton really wanted to look into Bo Nix, and he loved it, fell in love.
And the other thing with the Sean Payton offense, we think of it with Drew Brees and all that, you can't forget that is a power at you run game that they want to have. And there can be variety to it, but you think of what they had with Mark Ingram and Reggie Bush. Reggie was kind of more lightning, and Ingram a little bit more power when that thing was popping. Guys like Pierre Thomas were more pass catching backs. When he had Alvin Kamara, Kamara could obviously do it all, but he was kind of a Swiss Army knife. But I think when Sean Payton's offense is really humming at its best, you've got some power at you downhill running to complement some of the quick passing games and then the occasional deep shot. Now, obviously, when Drew Brees got to his peak indoors in New Orleans, he could throw the deep ball as good as anybody. He added that to his game, and the Saints offense could get vertical down the field in a hurry. That might not be the case with Bo right away, but what I saw with Denver's power run game, guards pulling, some centers pulling, coming at you downhill, I mean, that's reason to get excited. And what did you say, 5.5 wins with them? Yeah. I just think that's low. I understand, I guess, why it's there. But if I'm a Bronco fan, I'm kind of optimistically excited about this season outside of week one at the Seahawks.
And it seems like they are. It seems like Bronco fans are pretty, out there saying, I'm quietly optimistic.
Well,
about
you know
this
how
team.
Bronco fans can get.
I do. But
they're a pain in the ass.
But you think about the Saints offense, like you talked about back in the day, it was predicated off that run game, but also the screen game. And so it was all it was all predicated on the short pass or the short, distance right there. And then Brees would take the top off on you.
Screen game's a great example. Yeah. By the way, with rookies in the screen game, those can go really wrong really quick.
Really, really quick.
I don't know a thing about playing quarterback. I get that. But you watch rookie quarterbacks and they I got a screen going. But if it gets covered up, they don't know how to maturely get out of a bad screen call that's gone wrong. Guys like Brady or Manning or Brees, right? Screen's getting blown up or it's covered up. Right away, they just dirt the thing, right? And it looks ugly, but it's all right, I'm going to cut my losses. It's not there right now. Some of these guys, like Bo had a couple of screens in the Indianapolis game on Sunday. One of them, I don't know if this was on Bo or if it was on his running back, number 38, McLaughlin, but he was 5 yards, maybe 10 feet away from his running back on a screen, and Bo ripped it right at him. He threw it at him like a dart, and it bounced off McLaughlin's chest incomplete. So it looked kind of bad, but it was right at the running back. Bo probably could have softened the toss to him, but it was a little bit of an off-schedule screen, and it was incomplete. There was another screen that they called, and Bo just aborted it, in the middle of it, and he ended up rolling out and making a play to a receiver down the field as a secondary read on that. And I'm not a lot of rookie quarterbacks, Steven. I think Caleb Williams would do that, but I think Caleb Williams and Bo Nix might be the only guys that would have a screen called and decide, doesn't look right, but I'm not giving up on the play either. I'm going to go out here and make a play quickly to the outside and still be able to do that. That's pretty, iterative, I guess, for a rookie quarterback in his preseason debut.
Yeah, no, unique, definitely.
It's cool
to
see.
Like, you have to have the confidence in yourself, but also the coaching staff. Like, the coaching staff has to have confidence in you to be able to pull that off. Because you're right, a lot of guys just say, you know, we're going to dirt the thing. We're going to just get it out and get out of the way and go to the next play. Or I'm going to try to force it in here. But no, Bo says, look, man, I'm gonna do my thing. The coaches know that they have trusted me, and I'm going to do it. So it's one of those things. But Bo, that's the thing, is his smarts and his IQ were never questioned. It was always just a question of the arm strength. It was never the accuracy. It was just the arm strength of Bo Nix. And I think if he can prove that he can, you know, get it into some tight spots in the NFL, there is some upside to Bo Nix's game on the next level.
So I like that. I think consistency, to your point, will be key with him. Because if you don't have, like, lift the top off the defense type of arm strength and accuracy, if you don't have the athleticism of an Anthony Richardson that makes you an outlier, you've got to win by, you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts at the quarterback position. And you can only do that if you're ridiculously consistent. So Bo Nix's success in the NFL, given what his skill set is, and he's got plenty of strengths to be successful, they will only really be successful if he's consistent along the way and he doesn't have any kind of long droughts or spells of, you know, not making the right choices. Russell Wilson, as painful as the experience was at times in Denver, he did have some good games along the way. Like, he had 10 for 11 for 80 yards and a touchdown, no picks, but it would be here and there. Right, his consistency with Sean Payton was so lacking, and you could see that drove Sean crazy. So if Bo can be a little bit more consistent at that position, I think that will go a long way for him. And I don't know. I think I'm tepidly optimistic on Denver over 5.5 wins this year. All right, let's get caught up on some of the top sound in sports. Let's play a little Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
All right, let's talk a little Beavers. Good to hear from the new play caller in Corvallis, offensive coordinator Ryan Gunderson, giving the media some sound and talking about one of his quarterbacks, Gabari Johnson. Punch it.
The scrimmage on Saturday, it seemed like Jabari is kind of looking like he should get some more reps with the ones. Did you see that?
I don't know. It's your opinion. I'm the coach. And
I'm just asking.
I'm telling you. I'm rotating them how I think they need to be rotated.
What about him? Has impressed you in the last 10 days or so?
He's a really dynamic playmaker. Outside of being a dynamic playmaker, just learning how to play within the offense and know when to make B play and not make A play, he's gotten very good at that and really happy with his progress.
So a little hard to hear exactly what Gunderson was saying.
It got a little testy, though.
I did feel like he was getting a little defensive there with the media. Can you explain more about this?
Yeah, so the reporter asked if Jabari Johnson should get more time with the first team. And because of what he's proven. And Gunderson goes, well, is that your opinion? And got mad. And then he goes, well, you just look good. And then he said, yeah, I'm the coach. I'll figure it out. And then they went off. And it was kind of a weird answer.
We got to see who this media member was.
I forget. I don't know.
It was TJ Mathewson. We got to have, get him on the show.
It was hard to hear there. I just thought it was a weird interaction there that Gunderson had. He got very defensive, I thought.
Well, who does he think he is? Coach Prime?
Talking about Gabari Johnson there. I reached out to my Beaver source. He says he still thinks that Johnson's going to be second or third team and third string. It'll be Ben Gulbranson as the starting quarterback.
Oh, okay. Because that's my theory, too, that it will be Benny G starting.
Yeah, I think so, too. I feel like there's so much more upside with a guy like Gabari Johnson, who, by all accounts, has made some pretty good plays with his athleticism in camp and in the scrimmages, but maybe just isn't, you know, there IQ-wise or just, you know, experience-wise like Ben Gulbranson is going to not make those mistakes. But I don't think Gulbranson is going to be the starting quarterback all season long. I think at some point there'll be another guy in there, you know, whether it's McCoy or Johnson as a starting quarterback. But I think Gulbranson will start out as number one there.
Now, Johnson, he's the one that came from Missouri.
Yeah.
And McCoy?
He's from Idaho.
McCoy's the Idaho transfer. Yeah. Okay. Got it. And Ben's the guy that's been there for 10 years.
Yeah.
Killed Florida in the bowl game. Ben Goldberg won 10 games, even though we didn't.
Never forget.
That's right. Warren Sapp talking about Colorado football. Wait a second. I forgot. Warren Sapp is the senior quality control analyst for the Colorado Buffaloes. Am I reading that correctly?
You are. And he actually had a quote in the same interview where he said he didn't think he would like coaching, but he absolutely loves it and is obsessed with it. Like, he is absolutely loving his time with Colorado right now.
Okay.
So he's, like, really involved with the Colorado defensive line.
All right. Warren Sapp, punch it.
A lot of depth. We know we're trying to develop some depth right now. We got five ends that'll rush. I tell them we got five ends on the two-lane highway, so y'all better fight for those reps because they're going to go fast. They're going to go fast. And inside, we just building depth and, you know, wanted the guys to be nice and solid because the one thing that I did see last year before I turned the TV off was we couldn't stop the run, and that won't happen with me. No. We're going to earn our right to rush by stopping the run.
We're going to earn our right to rush by stopping the run. He is saying all the right things. Who else can we get on Dion's coaching staff from late 90s, early 2000s defensive football? Is Zach Thomas available?
He came on last year and just kind of did some speeches and stuff. But yeah, he got hired on this year as quality control and says he absolutely loves it as a coach. And he's becoming obsessed with coaching.
Charles Haley around?
That guy's got some stories.
Bryant Young?
Brian Urlacher?
That we're kind of crossing eras a little bit.
Oh, we're going 90s here?
Well, I said late 90s, early 2000s. Well, I went early 90s.
Can't we get Ken Norton Jr. back out there?
Ken Norton Jr., he is coaching somewhere.
Hardy Nickerson?
That's a great name.
Greg Lloyd.
Pretty sure Hardy Nickerson's kid is playing football somewhere.
I see
that name Nickerson. I was thinking
of all the Steeler linebackers that they had. Greg Lloyd.
Lavon Kirkland.
Chad Brown,
come on now. A Seahawk legend.
Kevin Green.
Chad Brown. Kevin Green, the late, great Kevin Green. Yeah. What a football life that guy lived. Lavon Kirkland was my favorite. I can't go into a Costco and not think about Lavon Kirkland. I swear. It's what it is. It's the Kirkland brand. It's 99 for the black and yellow.
But Colorado had T.O. He helped out, I think, for a little bit there, for a second there.
He came to Eugene.
Yeah.
He was there for the ass whooping.
He's had some speakers there. T.O. was there. Warren Sapp was one of the guest speakers they had. Now he's a coach, so that's pretty cool.
Can we get Simeon Rice to coach there? Who else can we get?
Super Bowl MVP Dexter Jackson.
Dexter Jackson.
Larry Brown.
MVP. The last Cowboys Super Bowl. The Larry Brown game.
Neil O'Donnell coaching quarterbacks. Barry Foster.
Star-studded coaching staff in Boulder. Is this Dion's last year? Are we just going to look back on this one time and be like, man, that was like Tebow mania, ironically also in Denver.
I think so. I think this is Dion's last year. I put the over-under at 2.5 last season, like 2.5 years at Colorado. I think he's gone after this year. Because Shador's gone.
It's like, remember when T.O. was a guest speaker and Warren Sapp was coaching defensive line at Colorado? Like, I feel like this is going to make the rounds on Instagram in 3 years and be like, holy crap.
What Hall of Fame defensive lineman was a quality control coach in Colorado in 2024?
Said, we're going to earn the right to rush by stopping the run. All right. From one D coordinator to another, Keith Hayward. He's the D coordinator with the Oregon State Beavers, talking about his young defensive line that has to stop the run. I'm sensing a theme today. Punch it.
Yeah, just there's a lot of young guys, like you said, and, you know, just out of them, you know, just we got to be more consistent with some of our movement stuff. But, you know, I mean, guys have been, you know, flashing. And now when you say D-line, I'm going to say the outside linebackers too right there. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, Olu's been doing a great job. Nico's been doing a great job. Interiorly, we just saw, you know, Jacob Schuster show up today. And that's where it starts, is up front with the D-line. Because if we don't stop the run on first and second down, then third down is not going to be great for us.
Very similar, you know, theme to what the Sappinator was just talking about with his Buffalo D-line. But I'm going to go ahead and climb out on a limb here. I think the Beavers will have a better defense than Colorado this year. And, Steven, I think that might be a theme we might be forgetting about just a little bit. I know you and I have talked about it on the show, but Oregon State is a defensive football team, and they need to ride that defense to whatever level of success that they'll have. 7 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins. I think we look back on 2024 and be like, damn, pun intended. That was a great Oregon State defense, and that is the reason why they'll be successful this year.
Well, culture and style is very important, I think, for college football, and Oregon State has that culture. You know, whatever you think of Jonathan Smith, he built a culture there, and Trent Bray has kind of continued it, right? Like, it's going to be about defense. It's going to be about running the football. It's not going to be chucking it down the field. That's not what Jonathan Smith did either.
Well, they don't have the guys to do
it
either.
They don't have it, but even when they had DJ Uiagalelei, they weren't doing it either. So I do question this, and I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be fine. I think the defense is going to be great. But now that it's a Keith Hayward defense, I know you say it's still a Trent Bray defense, but he's got to look over the entire program. Is this Keith Hayward's defense in my mind? Is it going to be as successful as it was when it was just a Trent Bray defense? I think it is. I think he'll be fine because Trent Bray is still going to have his hands all over that defense. But ultimately, the final decisions are going to be Keith Hayward because it's his defense now. Trent Bray's in charge of the entire team. I don't think that it's going to matter too much because I think Hayward's a good coach, but I think that's something to look for, the first couple of games of the season. But you're right. In order for Oregon State to be successful this season, it's going to be on the defensive end, especially early on when they're playing teams like San Diego State and Purdue in games that you feel like you need to win. It's not going to be because, Ben Gulbranson's throwing it down the field 50 yards. It's because they're stopping these teams and getting good field position, and then Jam Griffin's, breaking off a 25-yard touchdown run.
To have a guy like Keith Hayward running your defense is such a valuable asset. I mean, he is a proven commodity on the defensive side of the ball.
Such a good hire.
And a Beaver. So,
great. I mean, what a
former
hire.
Duck, but a Beaver. And tremendous hire, really great fit. I think my point with, quote-unquote, whose defense is it, I think it has a Trent Bray bones of, well, I'm talking schematics, and not just like, oh, Bray's calling defensive plays, because he's not, right? It sounds like Keith Hayward's going to be calling the defensive plays, as he should. He's earned that right. He's got that ability to do so. But the offense is Ryan Gunderson's offense. The defense is, at the very least, a Bray-Hayward mesh,
as opposed to
being Keith Hayward's defense,
right,
quote-unquote. I mean, he's the DC, but obviously it's much more of a meshed partnership on that side of the ball than it is the autonomy that Ryan Gunderson has on his side of the ball because of Trent Bray's background.
And he's built the culture there. Trent Bray has built that culture of what it is.
And part of the culture is the scheme. That's what I'm saying. It's,
right.
Part of it is the game, is the actual scheme that he implemented on the field. That's part of their culture because that's what's been successful.
So you don't think it's a big deal that Keith Hayward would be calling the defense rather than Trent Bray?
I mean, I don't think it's a big deal because I think they're both incredibly capable of it. But when you're just batching it as it's no longer Trent Bray's defense, it's Keith Hayward's defense, I don't see it that way at all.
Yeah.
I think those guys are together on a whiteboard or a chalkboard saying, hey, let's try this stuff. Let's try this stuff. Let's try this stuff. And Trent's not doing that with Gunderson. I mean, that's what my Beaver senses would be telling me. But I don't know that for sure. Maybe you're right. Maybe it is carte blanche. It's Trent Bray saying, hey, I've got a program to worry about. But part of what made Trent great is dialing Ish up on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
And you don't want to lose that, even though there's a degree of handing it off to Keith. I don't think Trent wants to lose that
and
what makes him a great coach in the first place.
That's kind of my point of it, is we just don't know what the system's going to be, what the atmosphere is going to be. Is Trent Bray going to have his hands all over that defense? Is he not? I'm with you. I think he's going to be more involved maybe than I'm kind of letting on here. But I think there is the question of, well, is Trent Bray still going to be, really in charge of this defense?
Or it's a good question.
Or is he going to let a lot of it go to Keith Hayward and make the decisions?
It's a good question.
I don't think it's a wrong decision either way, because I think if he lets it go to Keith Hayward and it's, quote-unquote, his defense, it'll be just fine. I think he's a great coach. But I do wonder, it might be a little different, and it might take a little bit of time to figure it all out. I think it's one of the questions going forward, because I assume that the Beavers' defense is going to be really good. And maybe it's going to take a couple weeks before they get to that level. That's my question.
Well, I think it's a tremendous question. And they have to make up for some lost talent. Akili Arnold.
A lot of lost talent.
Mascarenhas Arnold. I mean, these are a lot of guys that carried the water for you on the field in terms of leaders on the field. Who are going to be the next leaders on the field for a Beaver defense? But they're also playing a little bit lighter offenses. Offenses that are a little lighter in the ass, as they say. Not much sand in the butt in some of these Mountain West offenses. The Beavers need to punch these people in the mouth when they come to Reaser. And if they do that, look, that's an advantage for Oregon State. It's a lesser schedule, but because it's a lesser schedule, let's have your defense dominate a lesser schedule. and have that be a dominating theme of 2024. I think I'll be looking at that. All right, we'll hear from Noah Whittington, Albert Breer, Marcus Spears, some more sound from them on the other side as well. Give away some tickets, too, at 503-417-7575. We'll tell you how to do that coming up on the other side, too. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon Duck football, excuse me, had their 11th practice of fall camp earlier today. Dan Lanning, Trayshawn Holden, and linebacker Devin Jackson speaking a little bit after practice. We'll have some sound from that coming up a little bit later in the show. Running back Noah Whittington, you know, he got hurt last year, so he wasn't around as much as fans were accustomed to seeing in 2022, but he says the whole running back room has dealt with adversity, and it helps motivate them with Oregon this year.
How we attack adversity, you know, our coach really has been challenging us a lot, you know, to stack good days. And when we don't have them, he can really, like, rip into us. So it's just, like, being able to overcome that and actually accept his challenges and come out the next day, I feel like mentally we've done a great job at doing that.
I love it. The coach. Is it Samples coaching running backs there in Eugene? But Steven, you know, replacing Bucky Irving, easier said than done, but they'll be relying on guys like Noah Whittington, like Jordan James, like the JUCO kid they got out of Missouri to do exactly that. And it sounds like they're developing that culture in practice.
It seems like all the guys for Oregon, whenever you hear them talk, it's all about competition, which is great. I think Dan Lanning, you got to give him a lot of credit for that. He has built a program that wants to compete with one another. It reminds me of the Pete Carroll Seahawk days back, you know, back in the day when he first got there. Every spot is open for a competition.
Always compete.
Always compete.
It was baked in his name.
It was. And everybody's competing at Oregon, and sounds like, but they're all respectful for one another as well. They're all rooting for each other at the same time. So it is interesting. Also, you know, I love Bucky Irving. I think he was excellent last season. But we're going into this year after losing him, and it's like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal because they got all these guys, Noah Whittington, Jordan James, you're right. And it's really not. Like, I think they'll fill in just fine. And, you know, the loss of Bucky Irving is not going to hurt as much as other positions likely would just because of the guys that they have coming back. So, you know, Oregon is just, I think Oregon has a lot going for them, Judah. I think they really do. I mean, I look at their season outlook, you know, 10.5 wins is that win total. I would take the over on that. I think they're at 11 wins. I love what this Oregon program is doing and Dan Lanning has done. He's built a culture there. I've been talking about culture a lot this show, but he's built a culture there of competition and work hard and working every single day. And those guys have bought into it. And I think it's showing every day of practice is going to show out this season.
The one thing on Bucky, what he brought to you in the passing game, that's hard to replicate. 56 catches, couple of tutties, 413 yards, 7.4 yards a catch, which was down from the 9.6 yards catch he had as a sophomore in 2022. He was always a safety valve, you know, for Bo Nix. And he could always, you know, make a play, or he could at least get you some really safe yards. By the way, a more tough runner, a more in-between-the-tackles runner than I think people would give him credit for because of his size. So while I agree with you, I think the stable that they have in the current running backs, Jordan James, who is been more of a short yardage guy in his time in Oregon. He's projected as the lead back. Then you got Noah Whittington coming back from injury as a redshirt junior. Jay Harris, that's the guy. That's the physical Marshawn Lynch type of hard-nosed runner that they got from the JUCO out of Missouri, which Dan Lanning's home state, you know, build a fence around Missouri, bring him to Eugene. Jay Harris is one of those guys everybody's really fired up about. Also, Jaden Lamar and DeJuan Riggs rounding out that running back room. But in the passing game, that might be something a little bit more difficult to replicate that you lose from Bucky Irving. But we've talked about this before. Hey, you also got a guy like Evan Stewart. That's not a guy that really walks around receiving rooms at Oregon all that often. Maybe a guy like that is someone that can shoulder the load.
Yeah, maybe we are. Maybe me in particular is selling Bucky a little short here. I love Bucky Irving. Like, I think he was excellent. He had a nice preseason game to his first game. You know, the Bucks.
I haven't seen any of his preseason action. He looked good.
Yeah, the Bucks love him. You know, good. 28 yards, 6 carries, including the touchdown as well. But you know, all the coaches are raving about Bucky Irving now. Like, he's the guy that they love. So
I'm gonna have to go watch his tape.
It's yeah. I mean, it is one of those things where I just feel like you know, the Ducks have so much talent that maybe I am taking for granted Bucky Irving a little bit and what he did last season. Because you're right, you could rely on that guy every single time he got the football. Like, he was falling forward every single time when you needed him to. And there's gonna be times this season when the Ducks need, you know, to get some tough yards. Do they have that guy? Is Jordan James that guy? Has Noah Whittington that guy? It's probably Jordan James. But is he a Bucky Irving type when he falls forward? We'll find out. Yeah. I think I am maybe underestimating the importance that Bucky had last year.
Man, short yardage. You know, I just think of the Beaver game. They got stuffed at the goal line a couple years ago. Remember the short yardage situations with the Washington Huskies, you know, a couple years ago in Autzen, last year in Seattle. Man, it's going to come. Steven, there's so much hype around Oregon, rightfully so. They're going to be winning a ton of football games. Mark my words, there's going to be some tough, stressful moments October 12th against Ohio State when Dan Lanning's got his hands on his knees, bent over on a 4th-and-1, praying to the football gods, please let us pick up this short yardage situation.
Don't let us miss another 4th-down conversion.
Please don't let our quarterback get hurt.
That could be
here.
A problem, though, Jude, is that they may not have that situation until that Ohio State game. So they may not know who their best, you know, ultra guy is that they want to say, we need 1 yard to
get.
Do
you think they would rather have one stressful game before Ohio State? Or do you like the soft ramp up here?
Not super stressful. I mean, like,
Oregon State, road week 3. That's not super stressful, but that's going to be intense.
Stressful-ish. Maybe like a 2-score game.
Like a stressful situation.
Like, I feel like you don't want to have, like, all 3, 4, 5-score blowouts. But if you can get, like, a 2-score blowout, we're in the fourth quarter. There's still a question of, like, okay, if things go wrong, the Ducks could lose.
Do you think Michigan State could be that?
No.
They just don't have the dudes?
They don't have the dudes.
They don't have the Spartans.
I actually slid in the DMs of a professional bettor, and I asked him about... is in the weeds, but I asked about...
That sounds about right for you. I'll be honest.
I asked about Florida Atlantic in their conference.
Wow.
American. Because Tom Herman's their coach, year 2. And I was I was like, what about them? You like them?
I forgot about Tom Herman.
And I asked him, he said, no, I don't like them. But he said, I do like him in week 1 against Michigan State because they suck really bad.
Wow.
And he's a guy that's from Michigan, so...
So he's a professional bettor based in Michigan, and he is down on Michigan State.
Yes, he...
Down not in a good way.
He says, I think Michigan fading State the Spartans. Sucks, so I don't mind FAU in week 1.
What's the spread on that? Owls and Spartans. They're the Owls, right? FAU?
They are, yeah. Tom Herman.
Didn't Lane Kiffin do a reclamation project there?
It is... last I looked, it was 12. FAU plus 12.
Oh, wow.
So I'm starting to change my decision a little bit on Michigan State after reading these type of things. I think...
Because you were up on that. You liked him.
I mean, I like Aiden Childs. I think he's...
I agree.
I think he's excellent. But
I'm fading this professional better here. I think people are not... They don't know what Jonathan Smith's all about. They're like, oh... Just Beaver coach, the Beavers suck. They're left from behind, and now he landed with Michigan State, and they don't know what he's all about. Obviously he exited poorly. He's a damn good coach. They also have Michalczyk, and that's worth at least one win.
That is true. Out of the first 5 games for the Ducks, I think the game that will be the closest is Boise State.
Malachi
Nelson, former #1 recruit in the land. He's probably going to be the quarterback. I like what Boise State has done. They're the favorite in the Mountain West. I think Oregon gets that win. I think they win, but I think that's the game where it's like 2-score. It's a 2-score win, and you look at the end of the game, you're like, you know what? This was actually a game. You know, it's 42-28, and you're thinking in the fourth quarter, Boise State has the ball. If they go down and score, we got a real ball game. I think something like that could happen.
Well, that game
between Boise State.
You got Peacock?
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, get Peacock. Do the free trial. Oh, this is great because Saturday, September 7th, that's Ducks, Boise State. I'm looking behind me at my printed Ducks schedule.
That's your board of schedules.
The day before, the whole bulletin board.
It is amazing. There's like 20 sheets of paper on this board that just are all schedules of NFL and college teams.
This is just me, looking longingly. You know that This Is SportsCenter commercial where it's the Oregon Duck typing at his cubicle, and he just looks outside his window at the ducks swimming on the pond, and they're quacking, yes. And he's just looking longingly, wishing he was on the pond and not in a cubicle at ESPN. That's literally me. I'm here in downtown Portland in my studio, and I'm typing, and then I look over longingly at my bulletin board, where there's like 15 sheets of paper, and they're all college football and NFL schedules that are laying out the next 4 months. And I'm like, there's my piece.
It reminds me of like an old school draft war room, NFL war room. Because like now they use like, you know, devices and computers and whiteboards. You're still, you know, printing out pieces of paper using pens and staples.
That looks so nice. Michigan State versus Prairie View A&M, September 14th. I feel better now. That's literally what's up here. I got a bunch of Big Ten schedules and the Beaver schedule up here in the Cougs schedule. So,
but what say you about the Ducks schedule? Do you think
that's what I was going to say?
Do you think they have a closest game before the Ohio State game? And if so, who is it?
I like your Boise State. It's either Boise or Michigan. Michigan State. I don't think it's Oregon State as much as
UCLA either. They want to put that UCLA in there as well.
Are we selling Oregon State a little bit? Because if we're saying that they're going to have a great defense, why don't they make that a battle?
Maybe that is.
Maybe they bloody those guys up. Maybe it's that one. Frankly, I'm saying, it's Michigan State. Both of those games are at Autzen. We see how these games go. The Ducks, sometimes they come out and they just smash people. When Chip brought Ukla in a few years ago, you know, game day was there. Oh, big game. 45-30. Never close. Colorado comes in. Never close. I mean, it could be one of those situations. I don't think that's that way with Boise, but if Oregon's this big, strong, fast, deep, they're not going to have trouble with these teams at home. It's the road game in Reaser with all that emotion. Maybe we're underselling Oregon State's chances to at least keep that game close and bloody those guys up.
You could be right, and that'll be Oregon's first road game as well. Like, I mean, you know, so it's, I don't know.
Maybe that's the test that you want before Ohio State. Maybe it's a month before, but maybe that's the one.
Maybe it is the Oregon State game. But I don't think it's the UCLA game, right?
Definitely not UCLA. Deshaun Foster ain't sneaking up on anybody.
And if it's like we said, you know, if the Oregon State fans show up and show out, Reese's Stadium is one of the toughest places to play.
Yes.
Like in all of the nation, not just in the Northwest or the West Coast. Like the nation, they lost two games the last two seasons. That was to Washington and USC.
Man, they're going to be so lit for that game.
Like if Oregon State's 2-0 heading into that game, hopefully they are, right? Hopefully they could go on the road. They could beat San Diego State. I think that's going to be a toughish game as well for Oregon State. But if they're 2-0, like the fans are going to show out for that game.
Now, Oregon's going to win. Oregon's going to win the game. No one's out here saying Oregon will lose. But it might be 5 minutes left in the third quarter, and it might be one score. It might be like 17-13. And you're like, wait a second. Why are we not throwing for 400 yards like we did in the first 2 weeks?
Why is Dylan Gabriel only have one touchdown right now?
Maybe Gabriel jams a thumb, gets banged up. Now you got Dante Moore, who played at Oregon State last year with UCLA.
Poorly.
And did not play well, to your point. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of questions. Maybe we're underselling that Civil War game just a little bit and thinking, hey, Jonathan Smith's going to give the Ducks a hard time. Boise State's going to give the Ducks a hard time. I don't know. I'm not really worried about the Ducks showing up big at home. They've proven they can do that outside of the Washington game and deliver when they're supposed to. The Oregon State first road game might be the one, to your point. That might be the tester that they have before Ohio State.
I'd be curious
what the listeners think. 503-417-7575. What do you think will be Oregon's toughest game before Ohio State October 12th?
I just feel like Boise State to me is still the most talented team and the best team out of them. And so for me, that's why I think that game could be the closest. I think Boise State is better than Oregon State. When they play at the end of the season, Boise State's going to be favored in that one in Boise. And I think they're better than Michigan State as well. So I just think that Boise State team, they'll be 1-0 probably after if they beat Georgia Southern on the road. Malachi Nelson, top recruit. Spencer Danielson's a great coach. He came in last year and really turned that program around. They're the favorites of the Mountain West. I think that's a good conference.
Boise State has to go to Georgia Southern?
Yeah.
That's a weird one.
They've always, you know what? The Ducks have never beaten Boise State either.
Is that right? That can't be right. Is that right?
They lost at Boise when LeGarrette Blount punched the guy.
That was Chip's first game in 2009.
They lost at Autzen to him.
And that's the only two times they played?
I want to say yes.
Oh, that's bad. Oh, that's okay. There's a lot on the line with this if that's really
Boise
the case.
Boise State has a 3-0 record. They won in 2008. They won at Autzen 37-32. They upset number 17 Oregon. Then the next year they won 19-8.
Yep.
And then in 2017, Boise won in the Las Vegas
game. Oh, that stupid game. Yeah. Or that was what, like 38-28?
38-28.
And Oregon had two defensive touchdowns by the same guy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who was the safety that had two defensive touchdowns. The offense couldn't do nothing. But Oregon had a safety that had two defensive scores against Boise that day. Who's excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby? That was rough.
All I know is
0-3 against Boise State.
They have never beaten Boise State, so
wow.
They got to get over this game. That's the important one.
That's that's rough, man. That's rough. So that's on Peacock. So the day before, Packers, Eagles, Brazil on Peacock. The Thursday before that, that's the NFL opener, I think, on NBC. So you go games on NBC and Peacock. I'm just saying, they're going to be promoting the hell out of Oregon Boise State on Peacock Saturday night during the NFL games on Thursday and Friday. So you'll be getting a lot of Ducks on NBC. Can you imagine, dude? We're going to watch Duck football on NBC and CBS. That's pretty badass.
It's pretty cool.
Like, you know, realignment, it sucks. But that part's kind of cool. Seeing Duck football on NBC is going to be kind of cool. All right, we'll go to break and come back. Give away some tickets on the other side as well. And you tell me, what's going to be Oregon's toughest game before Ohio State? Is it week two versus Boise State, week three at Oregon State, or even week whatever it is, five or six, when they are home on a Friday night to Jonathan Smith and Michigan State? One of those three. 503-417-7575. We're just going to eliminate the road game at UCLA. That's a three-touchdown win,
and
at
Idaho.
Least. And Idaho in the opener. We'll bounce a break and come back. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Catano. John will be back Thursday in the final push to college football season, August 31st. Oregon State hosting Idaho State, Bengals and Beavs. And same day, around the same time, Oregon and Idaho, Vandals and Ducks at Autzen Stadium in the week one openers. That's going to be fun. I believe Oregon State opens on the CW at 3:30. So settle in, get those digital antennas fired up, and watch a little Beavs versus Bengals. That's exactly what I'll be doing Saturday, August the 31st on the CW. Meanwhile, Oregon will open an hour later on the Big Ten Network. We were talking about that yesterday. Do you have the Big Ten Network? I know probably most of you do, or have a pathway to attain viewing privileges on the Big Ten Network. For me, it is courtesy of my big brother's mother-in-law, I believe, is how I try to work that out. That may or may not be the actual example. But if you have a similar example, time to get those plans in order. Get Peacock to watch Boise State in Oregon, September 7th, Packers-Eagles the day before on Peacock, and the NFL opener, which is Ravens-Chiefs. On that Thursday night as well. Steven, we're just getting a couple weeks away. It's getting pretty exciting.
Really exciting. I cannot wait. I know it's three Saturdays away from week one with college football, but I'm already counting down to week zero and two Saturdays. So I'm excited even for that. And then you got the NFL coming up after that. Just it's going to be great. It's great to have football back on the TV, having some preseason on earlier.
Preseason's
this
been
week.
Fun, yeah.
And now, you know, I'm starting to, I just turned on old classic games of some college football games from last season. So,
nice.
Well, next I know coming up is Washington at Oregon State. So that's going to be fun to rewatch that one.
That's coming up on ESPNU.
It is, yeah. I was checking that out, so I'm excited.
Washington, Oregon State?
Yeah.
That was a good game.
Was a good game.
Hell of a game. That was really Jonathan Smith's last game, let's be honest.
It was the last hurrah right there.
That was tough.
I wonder if they had won that game, how that Oregon, the Civil War turns out.
Yeah.
Do you think they're better that game?
Well, do you think Jonathan still takes the job, right, obviously?
Yes.
And so does them taking the job still affect their approach to the Oregon game, or are they still so hyped after beating Washington and having their... I mean, they're still up for the playoff, right?
They are, and
if they beat Washington, they're still in the playoff
mix. Those are two different Oregon State teams.
Totally.
The game against Washington, the game against Oregon were two completely different teams.
I mean, it changed. The program really became a different program in the matter of a handful of plays. Losing the Washington game, Jonathan Smith's appearance on Canzano to the Oregon game. It's really the handful of plays that lost them the game against Washington, which was a hell of a football game, changed the program, unfortunately. Because I agree with you. If they win that game and they're still in the playoff mix, even though Jonathan may have, you know, still given the tea leaves that he did to Canzano, I think they are a different team. And I think they at least give Oregon a huge run for their money, yeah, which is they haven't won in that place since 07, man. It's been a long time.
It's a house of horrors for them.
House of horrors, for sure. All right, coming up next hour, 5 at 5. We'll give you the 5 biggest stories in sports. Steven and I are also going to give you the rankings of the divisions in the NFL. We'll rank them 8-1, worst to first, see how they stack up, who has the best division in football, what's the worst division in football this year as we get ready for the NFL season. But first, we'll take caller number, let's go 6 right now, Jay Cutler. At 503-417-7575. Pair of tickets. Green Day, Providence Park, September 25th. Caller 6, Jay Cutler. 503-417-7575 goes to see Green Day. We'll see you next hour.
BFFT. Built by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Jude and Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Ball Face Truth.
Flying through 2 hours, final hour on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. Mid-August, John Canzano back Thursday here on the show ahead of the final push to college football season. Jude and Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for the Bold One today. And you at 503-417-7575. Green Day tickets. Oh, man. Hot off the press, Steven. We had a lucky winner, though.
Katie in Springfield, and she was ecstatic.
Really?
I loved it. She was yelling at her husband, I won.
Oh, got her on the air.
I loved every second of that conversation. I got to talk to her for the entire day. She was so full of energy. So, yeah, congratulations.
All right, Katie. Very, very glad that she got to go. I will say, man, Green Day, it's not like I'm like a huge Green Day fan in terms of like I know all the deep cuts or I know all the stuff, but I tell you what, nostalgic big hits, you just give me that little guitar riff of Boulevard of Broken Dreams, and I'm immediately, you know, that's field day, 8th grade, or 7th grade, I can't fully remember. I think 2005, I want to say, is when that American Idiot album came out. I mean, those are the golden years.
Well,
are you rocking JUCO ball at that point, or what are you doing?
JUCO ball would be 06, 07.
Okay,
but that's the thing. Green Day, they rocked before that.
Way before that.
Like they rocked. I don't want to say that they sold out, but they kind of sold out a little bit to become.
You told me that yesterday.
To become super famous, which is fine. Like I would do the same exact thing, but they kind of got their songs to be more radio friendly and just
Yeah.
But they had some real bangers back then. They rocked. Go listen to some of their older stuff. Really good.
I know real music fans are just rolling their eyes when they hear me talk about how good American Idiot was. And that was 2004. We need Peter Sampson back. We need to call him up. That guy, he knows the history of rock and just music in general, backwards and forwards. He would set me straight on how much Green Day rocked before American Idiot in 2004. But it's that 04 album, man. I mean, you got American Idiot, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, Holiday, Wake Me Up When September Ends, and my personal favorite, Jesus of Suburbia, which you got to understand, I played the drums as a kid growing up. Played a little at church, but all church songs sound the same, right? Not very difficult to do. Just lay down a beat, everybody does it yourself, although I love playing. As a kid coming of age, trying to find yourself in your identity, and I was never like emo kid or anything like that. It never had those vibes, but boy, did I love, absolutely love to go into my parents' garage where my drum set was. It was a Pearl, and plug in my headphones and get them into my Discman. I had a Discman. It was just from the age when we're going from Walkman to Discman, and put on my mix that had Green Day on it and Jesus of Suburbia. It's a 9.5 minute long song that's got like four different, you know, four different kind of, what do you call them? Like modes, I guess. Like four or five different miniature songs within the full track. And that thing is the best song to drum to that that you can have. Outside of like, you know, Avenged Sevenfold and some double bass stuff. I wasn't advanced enough to do the double bass stuff when I was a middle schooler. But you give me just that little Jesus of Suburbia, man. That is an all-time track to drum to. So I always associate Green Day with that. So Katie, you said it was? Katie in Springfield?
Katie in Springfield, yeah.
Going to see Green Day at Providence Park, sounds which like how badass
date.
Is that?
It sounded like a little date night with her and the husband.
Oh, she's
like,
excited.
We just need a day out, you know, day out of there. And it's like, yeah, you do. Well, you do. We all do.
Blow off some steam, huh, Katie?
I agree.
You know what I'm saying?
I wish I was winning the tickets.
That's good for you, Katie. One of our favorites. Well, hey, if you thought Green Day was cool, we still have a pair of Luke Combs tickets to give away. Now, I don't have a connection to Luke Combs the way that I have this weird nostalgic connection to 2004, 2005 Green Day, which is when I thought they were cool, but they were cool for like basically two decades before that. Who is Luke Combs? Like, what does he do? I know country fans are like, what is wrong with you? But I'm not a huge country guy. He sings, right? Yeah, he's a country guy.
You know, again, I don't really know country music as well. I know I've heard of Luke Combs, but I can vouch to this. Coach Vaughn, she's a big country gal in the summer.
Oh, okay.
When it's summertime, she's busting out the country songs, and she says Luke Combs is awesome.
Is he like the GOAT country artist right now?
No, not the GOAT.
Who is that? Eric Church?
Zach Brown band for her. I don't know.
Still? Okay. I don't argue with that at all.
She loves
those guys are ridiculous.
I don't know who the GOAT is now because country music has changed so much.
It's probably like Tim McGraw or something.
He's the GOAT.
Garth Brooks.
Gotta be Garth.
Luke Bryan. Now, Luke Bryan, people are out on Luke Bryan, aren't they?
I think Coach Vaughn likes him.
Okay. Well, maybe Coach Rock could call in and set us straight on who's cool in country these days.
I feel like I could sing like Luke Bryan does.
Or I could just yell across the hall to our friends over at 98.7 The Bull. They would, they'd be able to tell me.
Yeah, that's what we need to do.
Who's actually, you know, we work at a radio station, you know, with actual other radio stations around us. We should probably ask them who's cool in their genre of music. They're asking us sports questions all the time, Steven. It's great. We walk out in the hall. All we do is people asking us about sports and their favorite teams. It's like, that's all we spend our time doing. It's like, well, if you consider us to be the sports experts, which we are, of course, then maybe we need to get our country music questions answered by you guys. So that's only fair. It always is hilarious, though, to hear other, like, people that are not in the sports world that ask you sports questions that are, like, kind of relevant and kind of make sense, but also don't make sense at all. And yet you try to have to give them a straight answer. I know you get that all the time. I hear you try to talk to people about sports all the time out in the hallways. And it's like, you can tell. They're not really sports fans, but they know enough words to put together to formulate a sports question.
Yeah, it's... And I'm not the most talkative guy to just random people either.
Right.
And I don't think people know that around the office. That's the problem, too.
Yeah. People are intimidated by you.
As they should be.
As they should. You kind of walk around. You're what are you these days?
I'm 6'2", right. Bigger guy.
Yeah, you wear it.
Got a deep voice.
You wear it.
You know,
really deep.
That's what I'm saying.
Really deep voice. Who has a deeper voice? You or Canzano? You think? It's close. Oh, you're picking up a phone call. Sorry, I can see you through. Who has a deeper voice, Stephen Vaughn or John Canzano? I think it's close. Although Canzano, when he gets a little under the weather, you know. And this is the thing. He actually doesn't sound half bad. I mean, he never sounds half bad. He sounds amazing. Golden pipes. But, you know, John, to John's credit, he plays hurt a lot on the show. You may not know this, but that guy, he guts it out when he's not feeling 100%. And he brings it for the show every day. You know, it's a long season on the Bald-Faced Truth. And John knows it, and he delivers. So he pops on the mic. Steven, you know this as well as I do. He knows... Sometimes he's sick. He's not feeling his best, but he says, hey, I'm going to gut it out. I'm going to host 3-6. I got this.
We got a expert on Luke Combs, Casey in Almsville, right outside of Salem. So we're going to get him on here. And talk some Luke Combs. He's an expert. Casey, what's up, man?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Good show. Hey, Luke Combs, I mean, his number one was Beautiful Crazy.
beautiful crate. How long ago was that?
Oh, I don't know. A few years ago.
All right.
I would have to say it was one of his first good solo songs. And then he remade Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
Yes.
Oh, that went viral recently, didn't it?
Oh, it's been all over. Well, yeah, he did. He started. Good guy.
All right. Thanks.
Well, it did go viral. Like he covered the song because he loved it as a kid, and then Tracy Chapman sang it live, which is why that went viral. Was she came back and sang it with him?
That's what it was.
But like he has already.
Boy, people are so pissed at me right now. I'm sure. Yeah, no, Tracy Chapman. She came back and did the song, but
yes.
But Luke Combs did a cover of it that people liked as well.
He's got a good voice though. He will say.
Okay. All right. Probably not as good as mine, yours, or Canzano's, but. Probably decent enough for the country.
Does he have a sports radio voice? We'll never know.
We'll never know. People are trying to, you know, cross over into genres way too much these days. I say, let the country artists be the country artists, and let the sports talk hosts be the sports talk hosts. Can we have a separation of church and state, damn it? Come on.
Did you go LeVar Ball on us and stay in your lane?
Yeah, stay in your... Wow. That's a guy I haven't heard from. You know what?
LeVar Ball?
I bet you he's on Deion's coaching staff.
You know why? You don't hear from him because Lonzo's always hurt and LaMelo's always hurt and LiAngelo sucks.
Man.
You don't hear from that guy anymore because all the hype around his kids went away.
Who do you think will fall from grace faster? LeVar Ball with Ball in the Family or Coach Prime with Colorado?
Well, hasn't LeVar already fallen off?
Yeah, but didn't they have if this is Deion's last year.
No, because Deion's going to get another job.
But will he be good at it?
I don't know, but I think Deion will get another job.
LeVar, peak LeVar, that was a multi-year thing.
Peak LeVar was him marching around on First Take.
It's like, oh my God, there's LeVar Ball back on my TV again.
I don't think Deion's not going to get fired by Colorado, but I think he's going to take.
He'll quit.
He's going to take a better job, a better job.
You don't think he'll just up and be like, you know what, I'm done with this?
No, I think he enjoys coaching.
I just think it's so funny, the whole vibe that they have. And look, I want to be fair because I do. There's part of me that really does like Deion Sanders. But Colorado, man, they were talking so much crap ahead of the Oregon game. And you know how the Ducks captured a lot of that on their, you know, video content that they did ahead of that game, right? And you saw, you know, Shiloh and everybody talking so much crap. It's like, if you can't back it up, Steven, like, tell me what you think about this. If you can't back it up, should you be allowed to talk that much junk?
No.
Or because from Colorado's standpoint, it's like, we don't care that we suck. We're just all vibes anyway. Come smash us in the mouth and we're not going to stop shutting up about how awesome we are, even though we're a 3-win football team. It's like, that is so nauseating. If you can't back it up, worth a damn.
Like Shador said that they're the Super Bowl for a lot of teams. But they won like 4 games. No, I'm with you. I feel like I'm cool with trash talking. Like, I am totally fine with it. It's just, I'm never going to start it. I will continue doing it. But if I start doing really bad, I'm going to stop. Because you have to have some type of level of winningness to be able to trash talk. And yeah, they had no success.
I got to find out what
their Pac-12 win. That was against Arizona State off a game-winning field goal.
Oh, yeah. And the Stanford game where they were up, 28-0 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I'm going to dial up their 2024 schedule here. What's their win total?
They got one vote in the AP top 25. I think it was Mike Hill.
Mike Hill, the FS1 broadcaster?
Yeah, he voted for Colorado at 25.
He does he hosts the studio show with like Chris Peterson and RG3 or whoever that is.
I believe that's who it was. Yeah, okay. I believe I saw that. But so Colorado.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, that was the one vote they got.
No Mikes, man. Mikes, Mike of Portland, Mike Hill.
I will say, though, they play North Dakota State week one, the Bison. I like Colorado minus the points in this one.
Well, that's a Thursday nighter, August 29th. Thursday nighter, 5 o'clock on ESPN, Coach Prime and the Buffaloes. It's a Buffaloes against the Bison? How do they allow that? That is animal on animal crime.
It's like, cousins?
I think they are the same animal, no?
I don't.
a buffalo and a bison? It's just two different
this is
names?
This we need Bruce Barnum on the show. I feel like he would know that.
It is Tuesday in the 5 o'clock hour. It's typically when Barney calls in. So maybe Barney could set us straight on what's a bison and what's a buffalo. But they are playing each other in the opener. Then it's at Nebraska. Probably an L for Colorado.
I would say an L. Depends on how
you're not beating Rayola.
I was gonna say it depends on how Rayola is. I mean, he's a true freshman,
golden child.
Try to look like Patrick Mahomes
at Colorado State Week 3. This is Jay Norvell, hate bowl, right?
Yeah, I mean it's not a guaranteed win by any means.
He's still there, right?
He is. Yeah, I think if he has another bad season, he may not be there. But
okay, and then. Oh, my page went away. So, then it's Baylor at home and at UCF. I don't know how good UCF is, but
they're a sneaky team. They're a sneaky good team. That's the thing, though, about the Big 12 is there's so much mediocrity.
They're all tough games. Yeah.
So if Colorado is any good, they could easily win 7-8 games and be competing for the Big 12 title. But they also could have 4 wins and be at the bottom, because I think there's a lot of teams that are like that where if you're going on the road and you're playing a team like West Virginia, that's going to be a tough game. But you get West Virginia at home, you can win that game a lot easier.
By the way, did you see who made the AP poll of one of the teams with a brand new head coach that changed conferences? That's your hint. Brand new head coach, changed conferences, but they are still in the AP preseason top 25. You're right there. I can feel it cooking. I can feel it cooking.
I don't know what.
Brent Brennan in Arizona.
Oh, that's right.
They're number 21. That surprised me a little bit.
No, they got Fafita back. They got McMillan back. That offense. They brought some guys back from that team.
First year head coach there? I mean, obviously not a first year head coach in general. Like, he was at San Jose State, but
I like Brent Brennan, though, as a coach. And so I
but what's his defense going to be like, you know? I don't know. 21?
Seems about right to me.
All right. All right.
I'll buy it.
Okay, McMillan and Fafita, that's enough there. All right, let's rip through the 5 and 5 biggest things going on, and we'll do it in 5 minutes. Here we go.
The 5 and 5.
All right, I'll just start. Number one, J.J. McCarthy. Steven, he needs knee surgery. Got a torn meniscus right knee after playing 30 snaps in his preseason opener. And he's going to be on the shelf for a while. Timetable still in question when he will return. But that is a blow to the Vikings' 10th overall pick.
Yeah, disappointing. I mean, the 10th overall pick, the future of the franchise is what Minnesota's hoping for. I don't think, and I want to get your opinion, do you think that they're going to not necessarily hurry him up, but if they figure out where, you know, they go in and they don't need, you know, I saw this before. The doctors will decide during surgery whether they need a trim of the meniscus. If they don't trim it, he can come back. If they do trim it, it could be out for the whole season. So let's just say they don't have to trim that meniscus. Do you think Minnesota is willing to play him at the end of the season if things are going wrong? Or do you just kind of let it say, all right, this is a lost year for you, JJ. You're going to learn off the field, you know, learn how to, you know, read defenses on the videos and stuff like that. Yeah. But on-field stuff is not going to be your thing.
I mean, I think his health is of primary importance, so you know, if there's risk for him to get further injured, they're not going to play him this year. But if there's also a chance to be like, hey, man, like, you're back, it's fine. We're going to get you in for 5 or 6 games. That's kind of the bummer of it all. Like, the whole plan with him is a little bit up in the air right now. There is no real clarity. Whatever path they take should prioritize McCarthy's long-term health, without question. That's what's in his best interests and the Vikings' best interests. But it's tough because he was one of those guys, I think, that could hit the ground running faster than people thought because of his partnership with Kevin O'Connell.
Number 2.
Now, speaking of Michigan and winning the national championship, remember Michigan won the national championship last year, and Jim Harbaugh was going to come back to be the honorary captain in Week 1 against Fresno State. Well, that has changed, Judah. Jim Harbaugh will not be in attendance for the Michigan season opening game on August 31st against Fresno State. Harbaugh called Michigan head coach Sherrone Moore, said he will not be there as he wants to remain focused on the Chargers team and not take away from this year's Michigan squad. So the team will celebrate the national championship at Michigan Stadium, but Harbaugh will not be there. But his parents will be. Jack and Jackie, they will stand in for him at the August 31st opener against Fresno State. And of course, Jim Harbaugh, Last week, he got a 4-year show cause from the NCAA due to the impermissible recruiting violations during the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm. But Harbaugh will not be the honorary captain for the Fresno State game.
Yep. Pretty funny, actually. And the fact that his parents are going to be there in his place, I think, fits. He loves his mom and dad. They
should have just got John out there, too.
They should have, honestly. Wouldn't that be funny if John was able to show up, but not Jim?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not one thing, it's another with oddities around Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. But, you know, he probably wanted to avoid a little bit of awkwardness. I'm sure, like, he would be celebrated so much. But, Steven, don't you think, like, he's the head coach of the Chargers. That's 1 week before they open the regular season. Isn't that a little bit tough timing to be like, hey, let's celebrate the national championship I just won last year with Michigan? Like,
no, I agree. I kind of
see where he's coming from.
I think at the time last week it was funny to say, yeah, you know, Jim Harbaugh's going to be the honorary captain after giving the show cause. But I think the smart decision is, yeah, let's just go away from this. Let's not like make fun of the whole situation. And yeah, just focus on the team of this year. We'll celebrate last season's win. Now we're going to move on to 2024. I think this is the right call all around.
Number three.
Hassan Reddick and the New York Jets, a lot of drama around them, but Aaron Rodgers says he wants Reddick to remain a New York Jet. He says it's going to be a, quote, fun ride in 2024. Rodgers saying there's always new things in the league. I've been around 20 years. I've seen a lot of stuff. I think as players, we always first try to side with the player because we know what it's like to be a player. I don't know him well. I had a couple messages with him, I believe, when he got traded. Obviously, we'd love him to be here, but we don't judge him for trying to do what's best for him. Yeah, I mean, we'll see if Hassan Reddick remains with the New York Jets. I don't know. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Seemed like this was also a pretty avoidable situation, and if the Jets could have avoided it and chose not to, then they are reaping the rewards, or lack thereof, of this. They are getting what they deserve when it comes to the discomfort and the dysfunction. But you know what? Discomfort and dysfunction have been what the Jets have been all about for most of their franchise's history, outside of one Namath Super Bowl and Super Bowl III and a couple of Rex Ryan trips to the AFC title game.
Yeah, doesn't this seem like something that they would have known about before making the trade with Hassan Reddick and the Eagles?
Contingent upon it. Like, that's why the Eagles traded him, was because they weren't going to extend him. So, yeah, you pretty much circle gets the square.
I'm putting this on the Jets. This is a Jets problem. We talk about organizations and culture. This is not surprising that the Jets would make this type of mistake, but it seems like it's such an easy thing for the Jets to be like, well, are you going to play here if you don't get a new contract? No? Okay, well, then no deal, and we'll go after somebody else. But the Jets did it anyways. Of course, Aaron Rodgers wants him back because he's a really good player, and that will help the defense out a lot and take a lot of pressure off of Rodgers and the offense. So I think it ultimately gets worked out because the Jets do seem like the type of team that will overpay and pay their players because they got to go for it. We talked about the Bengals. Are they going to do that with Ja'Marr Chase? I don't know. But the Jets know that they have a window of 1 year, 2 years max right now with Aaron Rodgers. So I think they're going to go all in, and they'll end up just biting the bullet and say, all right, here, Hassan, here's the money you need. Let's get this, try to get to the playoffs.
Week one at San Francisco for the Jets, Monday Night Football.
Number four.
Well, if the Jets need a backup quarterback, there's one on the market that says he wants to play still. That is Colin Kaepernick. It's been 7 years since he played in the NFL, Judah, but he recently told Sky Sports that he is hoping to return to the league. He's 36 years old. He says, we're still training, we're still pushing, so hopefully we just got to get one of these team owners to open up. Of course, Kaepernick had a workout with the Raiders back in May of 2022, which came after a very public workout at halftime of Michigan's spring game in 2023, when he threw in front of all the Michigan fans and his head coach, Jim Harbaugh. All the fans, Big Ten Network, broadcasted it live of Colin Kaepernick having that workout. But
I forgot about that.
49ers, they did struggle in Kaepernick's last three seasons. They lost 10 of their last 11 starts with Kaepernick. And overall, Kaepernick, 28-30 as a starter with the 49ers. 72 touchdowns, 30 interceptions in the 69 career games played. Nice.
Well, good luck to Colin. Do you think people would still react negatively to him now at this point? 36-year-old?
100% yes.
It hasn't been long enough.
It is not worth it. Not worth the risk at all. Like, Kaepernick's not good enough to have that type of...
Hey, you don't know that. He might still have some.
No, I do know that. He's fine. I'll say this. Kaepernick's good enough to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. Like, no question about it. But
if his name was Joe Milton,
if his name was Stephen Vaughn, he'd be a backup quarterback. But the distraction is going to cause by bringing him on. It's just the Tim Tebow type of thing. Tim Tebow could have been a backup, I think, too, in the NFL. But the distraction is way too big. And so I think for that, like, he's not going to get a job. It's not worth it. Like, for any team to go out and sign Kaepernick, it's just going to be a zoo around that entire organization. And as for your backup quarterback, not worth it.
Would he consider a move to tight end like Tebow?
That's one of my most prized possessions. I have a Tim Tebow Jaguars football card where he's playing tight end.
A game preseason card or a training camp?
I mean, it's probably a practice jersey he's wearing.
I need the team photo.
But I love the Jags. Jaguars. My team.
That was Urban Meyer, right?
Yeah, dude.
I mean, we need the documentary.
We need Tim Tebow back.
Number five.
NBA Cup schedule is out.
Seahawks need a tight end?
Isn't it weird? I think NBA Cup is just a weird thing to say. It makes me think of like cup and a jock strap. And I don't think of that with any other cup. But when I say NBA Cup, for whatever reason, I think of that. Isn't that an awkward thing, NBA Cup? It doesn't sound like it should be the real name of the thing.
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like that's just a you problem.
Well, the schedule is out, at least partially out, for the NBA Cup. And Klay Thompson will make his return to the Bay Area for his first game as a member of the opposition. He, if you missed it, signed with the Dallas Mavericks in free agency, and they will face the Golden State Warriors November 12th, part of the full NBA Cup schedule that was unveiled today. Some of the bigger games, you have the Knicks and 76ers. 76ers with Paul George. You've got the Mavericks and Warriors and Klay Thompson's return to the Bay. Lakers and Spurs, part of the early games in NBA Cup. And these are all part of the group stage games as well, right? So the group winners will advance to the knockout rounds, et cetera, like we've started to see across other sports. How'd you feel about NBA Cup last year, and how excited are you for Klay to the Bay as a Mav?
I can't say I'm excited about the NBA Cup. I don't care. I don't get it. I ask you these questions about the Timbers in soccer when they play these like in-season tournaments. I don't understand, like, what's the point of winning them when nobody cares about it? And I kind of feel like that way with the NBA.
But you win money if you win, right?
Probably, yeah. I don't know. It doesn't do anything for me, but I will say I'm excited to watch Klay return to the Bay Area. Like, he's going to get such a good ovation from that crowd. It's going to be pretty cool. And I think Klay feels slighted by the Warriors as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays. Like, it could be one of those games where he goes off. It also could be one of the games where he's 0-for-12, like he did when he ended his career with the Warriors against the Kings, and he just couldn't hit a shot.
Was he slighted, you think? By
no, I don't. I don't. I think it was time. It was time to let it go with that dynasty. Like, they weren't winning anything when all three of them were healthy. They were still a playing team. So I don't think they were good enough to win anything important. I think it was okay to move on from him. I think it'd be okay to move on from Draymond and try to, you know, build something one last time around Steph Curry. And they're trying to do that. They got Buddy Hield to kind of replace Klay Thompson. They got some young guys that they like in Pajemski and Trace Jackson Davis. So I think that the Warriors are going to try to surround Steph with different type of talent, which is good. It wasn't going to work. They weren't going to win a title with Draymond, Klay, and Steph anymore. They just passed their prime. So I think it was the right decision.
34-year-old Klay Thompson signed with the Mavs 3 years, $50 million, returns to the Bay November 12th, playing for the NBA Cup group stage against the Warriors. We will rip through the worst to first divisions in the NFL coming up next and give away Luke Combs tickets later on in our final push to the end of the show. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Gonna go through the divisions in the National Football League, rank them 8-1, see how our divisions compare. You can tweet at 750 The Game. You can call 503-417-7575 as we rip through some of these, Stephen. I think there will be some crossover with our respective rankings, but I am curious, and I've put a little bit of thought into this, but not too much, so I can be talked into certain things one way or the other. But let's do this. I'll give us a little bit of a countdown. Actually, no. You know what? You just give me your eighth-ranked division, and I'll give you my eighth-ranked division in response to it, and we'll see how it compares. But your lowest division, the worst division in the NFL in 2024 for you is what?
NFC South. The NFC South, the Bucs won last year. You got the Falcons, you got the Bucs, you got the Panthers, and you have the Saints. I don't think they're much improved over last season. I know Kirk Cousins of the Falcons now, they're the favorites. Some people like them. I think I'm a little higher on Bryce Young than other people are. I think the Panthers could be better than last season, but I think overall, I'm not buying the Bucs again. I'm not buying the Falcons either this year. The Saints have Dennis Allen and Derek Carr as their quarterback. I don't think they're a good enough team to be considered any type of contender. And the Panthers just aren't ready yet with their new coach, Canales, and Bryce Young. I think they're clearly the worst division in my mind.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I also had them last in my rankings. So NFC South is eighth for you. Might get some spice here at seven. I will give you mine. My seventh ranked division in football this year, I'm going with the NFC East. Now, that might be a little spicy because you got some big brands. You know, ESPN, they love the Cowboys. I'm down on the Cowboys vibes. I don't like what I'm getting with the Giants right now, even though the neighbor's pick was the right pick. That doesn't feel right to me there. Washington is a building it from the ground up. And Philly, I don't know if you saw that story on ESPN recently. Apparently, Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts are not vibing whatsoever. New play caller in Kellen Moore. New defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio. They'll be good, but this is not the NFC East of a couple years ago or even last year. That's my seventh best division, second worst division in football.
I have the NFC East at number six. But I agree with you. I think they're very down, and you could definitely argue them as number seven. But I think I rate the Eagles a little higher than you do. I know there was the problems with Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts. They don't necessarily see eye to eye. I don't know that that matters. I think that they'll be okay. They remember last season they were 11-1 before they kind of lost all their momentum, lost all their games. I think they're still an NFC title contender where. I look at my division in the number seven spot, and that's the AFC South with the Jaguars, the Texans, Colts, and the Titans. I don't think any of those teams are real AFC contenders, and so that's why I put the NFC East above the South of the AFC. I think the AFC South has some solid teams. Jags, I think, are okay. Texans with C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, I think they're going to be really good. The Colts, I like the Colts as long as Anthony Richardson can stay healthy. Titans, I don't have a lot of faith in, but they're always one of those teams that I feel like just can beat anybody in any given day. But I feel like none of those teams really can compete for a conference championship. So I have them at seven compared to the NFC East, who I have at six.
All right. So you have the NFC East at six. You have the AFC South at seven. I'm higher on the AFC South than you. I am really high on Houston. I think Houston is going to win that division and possibly pop off and be the top seed in the AFC. That's the theory I'm working on right now. Sometimes there's one of these teams that comes along and just puts it all together, and you just look up and they're 4-0 and 5-0, like Philadelphia a couple years ago, right? They were in 2021, they were a 7 seed. They lose at 2 seed Tampa. And it's like, the Eagles, they were just outmatched. The next year they come up, boom, from jump, they're like the best team in football. And it's like, I probably could have seen that coming.
Do they have a little bit of Cincinnati Bengals Joe Burrow vibes to you?
I, ironically, Houston, you mean?
Yes, because think about that. I mean, Joe Burrow and the Bengals, Burrow's second season, isn't that when they made the Super Bowl?
It is when they made the Super Bowl. You compare
could that be the Texans this season?
I think so. Although, I actually think the Texans are better than that team. What made that Burrow Bengals team special is the playoff run they went on as a 4 seed. You know, they were either the 3 seed or the 4 seed. I think
they should have lost to the Raiders in their first round game.
They had the 4 versus 5 game against the Raiders that came down to the wire.
But Derek Carr, the reason why I hate the Saints, throws it short.
Threw it short of the goal line on the last play of the game, right?
Yes.
It was a close one. Who was that? I can't remember the tight end who he was going for, but it was it Waller? It was close. It was just before the goal line. And Cincinnati wins that game. They give up how many sacks to the Titans the next week?
A million.
Like 9 sacks. The Titans sacked Burrow 9 times and lost the game. Ridiculous. And then the AFC title, one of the bigger shockers that I can remember, beating Mahomes in his building in overtime in 2021. Just wild stuff. Houston was the 4 seed last year. You know what I mean? I think that they have a chance to be a top 2 seed this year. Like, and you know, they'll, even if they win their division, I think they're going to be a good team and probably a tough out. But that Cincinnati 2021 run, I think, was more special than it was a template for other teams to follow, because their offensive line was so bad. Houston's got a good offensive line and crazy good weapons, similar to that Cincy team, but like really good weapons to work with. And ironically, Joe Mixon as well.
Here's my argument for why also I like the NFC East more than the NFC AFC South. How many playoff teams are in the AFC South? Texans? That's it.
How are you not high on your Jags? How am I higher on the Jags than you?
But I look at the NFC East. The Eagles and Cowboys are going to make the playoffs.
No. Yes. Both of them?
Yeah.
I think something's going to go terribly wrong with one or both of those teams.
We always overreact to the Cowboys, and they're always decent.
That's true. They're
not going to win in the playoffs.
They crap out 12 wins in the regular season. Dak and then actually crap out in the playoffs.
Dak is good enough. CD is good enough. The defense is fine.
See, I love Steichen with Indy, and I really like the Jaguars this year. Change defensive coordinators, which, by the way, I don't think that was totally the problem. They had some good defenses, but they brought over the Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator, Ryan Nielsen. Eric Armstead is there now. They re-upped a couple of their key pieces in the secondary, and frickin' Josh Allen, who is now going by Josh Hines Allen, I think, Hines Allen or something like that. He's a monster.
Tre'Von Walker, the number one overall pick a couple years ago. He's a good player as well. So they got some dudes.
I really like what I'm getting from the Jaguars this year. I have the AFC South number 5 in my division. So you have them 7. I have them 5. My number 6 division is actually the AFC West. Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, Raiders. I have them at number 6. And I have the AFC South at number 5. Where do you have... Who is your number... 5 team? You've already gone NFC South. You've gone AFC South. Who's your number? And your 6 team was already the NFC East. So yeah. Who's number 5 for you?
The 5th worst division I have is the NFC North. The Packers, Lions, Vikings, Bears. I wanted to put them higher, but I couldn't put them above the Chiefs in Kansas City. So I have the AFC West number 4. With the Chiefs, I think that I just couldn't put them any lower than 4. But NFC North, I think they have potential to be really good, right? I think they have the potential to be maybe even the best division in all of football. I need to see it from the Lions again. I need to see it from the Packers again and Jordan Love. I need to see it from the Bears. I know you're very high on the Bears. I'm not quite as high on the Chicago Bears quite yet, and I don't think the Vikings are going to be great. So I think there's still too many questions for me to put them towards the top, but they definitely have potential to be one of, if not the best divisions in all football.
I'm definitely higher on the NFC West or on the NFC North than you are. That's for sure. Like I said, I've got the AFC South at number 5. My number 4 division in football is the NFC West. You may be higher than me, or
I am.
Are we on the same page now?
No, so I have the AFC West at number 4.
Oh, you have the AFC West at number 4. I have the NFC West at number 4. And obviously, I like my Seahawks and the Cardinals and the Niners and Rams, but I think the Niners will come back just a little bit. The Rams, I'm really high on, but they do have some injuries that they have to navigate. Nacua right now and a couple of other guys. Losing Aaron Donald, that's a tough piece to just replicate the next year. And as much as I like Mike McDonald, it's still a first-year head coach with a first-year play caller in Ryan Grubb, so... The NFC West might be the most interesting division in football, but they're the 4th best division in football, in my opinion.
And I got them at number 3, the NFC West. I like the 49ers. I think they're the favorite in the NFC. And you're right. The Seahawks, I think, have potential to make the playoffs and be a really good offense, one of the best offenses in the NFL. The Rams always are competitive with Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay. Like, I have a lot of trust in that team. And I actually think the Cardinals are pretty solid. So I think the Cardinals are actually going to be more of a surprise team. Their record may not show it, but they're going to be competitive in a lot of different football games when they're playing outside of the NFC West. So I think the NFC West actually is really good. So I have... AFC West at number 4, NFC West at number 3. Who you got at number 3?
At number three, I had a hard time with this one. Originally, I had the NFC North, but I moved up the NFC North to number two, and I'm putting the AFC East at number three. AFC East, Jets, Bills, Dolphins, Patriots. Obviously, the Patriots are not great, so it really has to be the top heaviness of those three teams in Miami, the Jets, and Buffalo. We know Miami has, you know, spurts of being a great regular season football team, certainly because of their offense and their speed. The Bills, I think they've found something. I think the Bills are just a team that we've almost forgotten about how good they can be. Obviously, Josh Allen is part of that. They changed offensive coordinators midseason, Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, you know, part of that 2019 LSU team, right? I think the Bills have found what works for them, and Sean McDermott is still a really good coach. For as much kind of either bad PR he gets for ill-timed 9/11 stories in practice, he still knows how to coach up defense. I think the Bills are a very good team. The Jets, just from defense, and we'll see what happens with Hassan Reddick, but even without Reddick, it's a very, very good defense with a chance to be a great defense once again. If you just get average play on offense, that's going to be another really tough team that wins 9, maybe 10 games. Makes the AFC East a really, really deep, challenging division. Third best division in football for me.
Yeah, I got the AFC East at number two. I thought for me, 1 and 2 were the easiest decisions. I thought the AFC North, AFC East were the top two divisions, and really then there was a tier after that. Because I look at the AFC East, and besides the Patriots, it wouldn't be shocking if any of these three teams represented the AFC in the Super Bowl. Like, things would have to break right, obviously, for all three of them, especially the Dolphins. I think, you know, you can't go on a really cold game and play in Kansas City. You're probably going to look bad in that one. But I think if things break right, I wouldn't be shocked if the Bills made the Super Bowl. I wouldn't be shocked if the Dolphins made the Super Bowl. And I definitely wouldn't be shocked if the Jets made the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. So I think there's three teams.
You said definitely wouldn't be shocked. Okay.
I definitely wouldn't be shocked with the Jets. They have maybe the best defense in all the NFL. And then you're adding Aaron Rodgers, who has been an NFL MVP numerous times and has something to play for. Like, he has a chip on his shoulder this year. I think that there's three teams that I wouldn't be shocked if they won the AFC. So that's why I had to put them at the number two tier for me. And then number one I have is the AFC North. That division is rough, man. Ravens, Steelers, Browns, Bengals. Again, I think the Browns, if things break right, like, they have the talent to represent the AFC. Same with the Bengals and the Ravens. And then the Steelers just somehow get 9-10 wins every single season. Doesn't matter who your quarterback is. You can have Duck Hodges as your quarterback. Doesn't matter anything. They are always going to be good with Mike Tomlin, so I have to put them at number one. Are they your number one, or is the NFC North your number one? So you love the NFC North.
I do love the NFC North, but not as much as I love the AFC North, to the points you just laid out. I have the AFC North number one. I have the NFC North number two. Bengals, Browns, Ravens, Steelers. That's always a tough division, but all these teams are tough and really good now. And that just makes it brutal, right? I mean, Joe Burrow, the Bengals are a Super Bowl contender. They finished fourth in this division last year because of kind of a fluke injury. Now, because Burrow got hurt in that Baltimore Thursday night game. And if you remember, there was all the pictures coming out before that game of him coming off the airplane with a cast, and Bengals social put it out, and then they immediately took it down. So something was going on with his thumb and his wrist before that game. But, you know, Clowney landed on it. And then he threw a touchdown to Mixon, and he just doubled over, and the Bengals season was over in week 10 because of it. Now, credit to Jake Browning and his girlfriend. Like, they did an amazing job keeping us glued to the TVs for Bengals games down the stretch. You know, real, you know, nice job by you. But, man, a healthy Burrow with a reigning MVP in Lamar, the best defense in the league last year in Cleveland. Who knows if they get anything out of Deshaun Watson? And then we don't know what Pittsburgh is cooking up with their devil magic, but all they do is keep making the playoffs and keep going above 500.
If they get Brandon Ayuk, I mean, that changes that offense.
I agree. AFC North, hands down, best division for me. The divisions we disagree on the most, you have the AFC West at number 4. I have them at 6. You have the AFC South at 7. I have them at 5. But The one we disagree on the most, the NFC North, I have them as the second best division in football, and you have them at number five.
Now, in fairness, I did say they could be the best division in football. I think there's a very wide range
You're
of expectations.
You're in mid-season hedging form right
Wide
there.
Range of expectations for that division. I'm not buying the Caleb Williams being super successful, CJ Stroud successful in year one. And I think that's, for me, that's why I'm putting them a little lower.
All right. Well, we'll wrap up shop on the other side. Tweet at us at 750 the game. With who's your best division in football? We'll finish up the show coming up. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, it looks like the Mariners decided to snap their win streak today. Have you seen this score, Steven?
They just wanted to know what the Mets felt like up in Seattle.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently, they are, you know, they outscored the Mets 22-1 in that series. Apparently, the Mariners were trying to do that in one game today in Detroit. Currently, bottom of the seventh, Detroit 15, Seattle 1.
It only counts as one loss, though, Judah. That's the good thing. It's not not stroke play, match play.
I like the way that you spin that.
Thank you.
They're getting out-hit 20-3.
Again, match play.
20 hits? It's hard to give up 15 runs without an error, but the Mariners are doing it.
It's hard to give up 15 runs to the Tigers.
A team that took 2 of 3 from you last week. And, yeah, there's worse teams. But they're not a good team.
No. They don't hit the ball. The good pitching staff. Seventh in the ERA, I believe.
Are you talking about Seattle or Detroit?
Detroit.
Hey-o.
Hey.
So, come on, Ems. The Astros are beating the Rays right now, top of the 8th, 3-1, with Drew Rasmussen on the mound for Tampa. So, see if Drew can keep the Astros at bay. Right now, he's dealing with bases loaded in the 8th. So, on in relief. He inherited those runners, I hope. But yeah, so the Mariners will probably fall a game and a half back of Houston by the time tomorrow comes around. Tomorrow comes around, me and Steven will be here for one final show. Then John will be back in the chair Thursday. But right now, I should say, as promised, before we get out, we'll take caller number 4, Brett Favre caller. Brett Favre caller at 503-417-7575 to go see Luke Combs October the 5th at the Gorge Amphitheater. Caller number Favre right now at 503-417-7575. Talk to you tomorrow on the Bald-Faced Truth.